It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24-7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
We open the program with some sage advice this morning. It happened just about 10 minutes ago. Our good friend Bevo Lance Jason on the Specs text line had texted into Bucky and Aaron to say, remind fans tomorrow, bring your sunblock. You have to do that. Make sure to bring that sunblock. Because it will be a sunny day tomorrow. A sunny day for football. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower. Here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital here on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Wake. Glad to have you with us. My co-host Jeff Howe will be along shortly. Our man behind the glass, our producer, who is all geeked up for a Friday night because he is the major domo and purveyor of all good things Flex ATX, because, after all, in the final analysis, it's the Flex. He's Jonathan John Donaldson, J.J. Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniel. You are all geeked up for Friday night, aren't you?
I am. This game day, I wake up. I usually have trouble sleeping for whatever reason. And
because you're geeked up for Friday night.
Yep.
You know, Nate Newton was the first one to introduce me to that term, geeked up. Oh, I mean, God. Years ago, back in the early 90s. Said, I'm all geeked up. And I'm like, what do you mean you're geeked up? Yeah. But you are, right?
I am, and I am not Rod Babers. Somebody, they went to the RBKD broadcast yesterday in Cedar Park. I think some folks came in and they thought Rod was me.
Well, that's like, not good.
No, that's good.
I mean, it's not good. It's not that there's anything wrong with Rod or with you. It's just you both are supremely and uniquely talented
we
in
are.
Your own and different ways.
So. I was like, I'm not as handsome as Rod Babers, but thank you. I'll take
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. And so you're fired up about the weekend, which actually got underway last night
with
a couple of eyebrow-raising results.
I call them two public perception upsets because maybe the teams that won didn't think they were going to lose. But on the Twitter polls, for whatever that's worth, the public felt Hayes would beat Aikens, and they felt that Pflugerville would handle Anderson.
Neither happened. Yeah. Neither happened.
This is a weird year. And okay, one more, because oh, man, I forgot to mention this. Okay, so when Cedar Park, okay, hold on, let me make sure I get this right. Okay, so Cedar Ridge got beat badly by Cedar Park, but Round Rock skated by Cedar Park. So logic would tell you that that Round Rock is going to stomp Cedar Ridge.
Not logic.
Transitive property is a dangerous thing.
Transitive property, those words uttered so sagely by my co-host. Proud graduate of Florence High
School. Damn right I am.
Whose purple and gold Buffaloes are on a bye this weekend. The pride of Northwest Williamson
purple
County.
Purple and white, by the way.
Oh, no gold?
No gold.
At all?
At all.
It's just all purple and white?
Purple and white. Yep.
Okay. I'm thinking of the Buffalo Bisons who are purple and gold. That's right. And it is going to be the all purple bowl next week. Purple Buffalo Bowl next week when
they
the
look
Bisons
look like the Grimace
the
out there. That's
right.
What I look like when I play. I look like the Grimace.
Still waiting for you to bring in that Highway 79 jersey.
When the Buffs are off this week, so
okay,
it's
you'll bring it in
week.
For game week next week when they get ready to play Buffalo.
I thought I knew where it was.
Wasn't there?
Well, keep in mind I moved, so
true.
There's stuff like I've got to find like my dog's rabies certifications, and I'm like, it's in a box somewhere in here.
You know, when he's talking about his dog's rabies certification, it's none other than where you know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24-7, my co-host Jeff Howe.
Snoop, I had to cut you off, man, because anytime we're talking about football, man, and you do transitive property, that is a very slippery slope, sir.
Mm.
You can get yourself in trouble real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a few years ago.
Transitive property is like the only thing I remember from math class, and it's just because you can apply it to sports.
Yeah.
Pretty much it.
That's true. I think it was a few years ago that
I saw this, like, it was NCAA basketball. Yeah, that's where it's really fun, NCAA basketball. We see this where it gets to the tournament, and it comes down at some team that won, like, seven or eight games should be the national champion of all of college basketball because they pulled one upset of somebody who pulled a mid-range upset, who pulled another mid-range upset,
who beat Kentucky.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So that's why we caution you about such things. What we don't want to caution people about is we will have our Whataburger Top 5 coming up, but before we get to that, I'm going to get you ready for some Texas and Texas Tech. You've heard Jeff Howe wax poetic on this matchup between the Longhorns and Red Raiders. And
7 a.m. pregame tomorrow morning.
You'll be waxing poetic then.
Be out of Bevo Boulevard at 9 a.m. with Chad and Bucky.
So that's when it starts. We'll give you a little more preview of that coming up. You're going to hear from Steve Sarkisian last night's Longhorn Weekly with Coach Sark. So we'll hear that. Talking about Texas Tech's defense. And then we're going to hear my conversation with Matt Wells, the head coach of the Texas Tech Red Raiders. So we have that coming up, followed by our Whataburger Top 5, and it's our Top 5 matchups of the weekend. Then we're going to visit with Bowie Bulldogs head coach Jeff Abels.
A Friday staple here on Light the Tower.
Absolutely, because the Bulldogs have their big matchup with Austin High at House Park tonight. Yes, that did make the Top 5 matchups list. I'll tell you that much right now. And then, after that, we'll have a Longhorn Notebook. This hour, we will have Inconceivable, and it is Friday, and we know what that means.
Got to go to the most flaccid state in the union and grab that low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, we got that. Got some else, too, we'll get to. We'll do that. And then, special treat in the 11 o'clock hour there. And I'm not just referring to the Supreme Lending Pickup.
Supreme Lending Pickup Contest with Chris Waters Realty, which Snoop and I continue to carry the weight. We're shouldering the load for the horn, as we did last week. We've done that the first 2 weeks of the contest.
In addition to that, special guest and yet a weekly contributor to this program.
Yeah, Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Mike Roach will be in the house. He's in town doing his thing on the recruiting front, so he's going to join us for hour number two. Get your Arch Manning questions ready, whatever you got for Mike on the Specs text line, 337-3776. We will take care of it in hour number two.
How about Pat McAfee on Monday Night Football the other night with Peyton and Eli openly campaigning for them to work it so that their nephew winds up matriculates to West Virginia?
I know we got a lot to get to just real quick. So I remember I think a fan wrote this, it was a story in the Athletic. And I don't remember who authored it, but I know they have no control a lot of times over what goes on social. And it was a story about Arch Manning.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, he's got Eli's poise, Peyton's arm strength, you know, Archie's will to win. I'm like, so you're basically going to call him the greatest quarterback that ever existed. If you put together the best parts of the Manning family, you get the greatest quarterback that ever existed. So I was like, it's a lot for a kid going into his junior year of high school.
That is. So, you can get your questions ready for that. All right. That's all what's coming up. So let's jump right into this. And we'll start off with talking about Texas Tech. Now, Jeff, we've talked a lot about Tyler Shuck and even Taj Brooks, and Sir Roderick Thompson expected to contribute more this week, and Eric Ezekama, who you say is the best player, not just receiver, best player in the Big 12 that they don't talk enough about. Is that how it is?
Yeah, and real quick, Craig, coming out of Lubbock, my colleague Chip Brown mentioned this morning. This has been matriculating out of Lubbock the last 24 to 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Taj Brooks may not play in this game. He's got an injury, and it sounds like it's going to be a game-time type deal, whether he goes or not.
Okay. All right. So
something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on, and indeed. And maybe that's why Matt Wells didn't speak much about him in our conversation yesterday, now that I think about that. But anyway, that's
and this, the injury the apparently here. Happened this week in practice.
Okay. All right. So anyway, that's what's happening, with some of that. So without, like I said, we've been talking quite a bit about the offense for Texas Tech, but we've also mentioned the defense, and we also have talked about what they do. And certainly, Steve Sarkisian had the Tech defense on his mind last night a Longhorn Weekly, which, of course, we tape it on Wednesday nights over at Pluckers, the West Campus location. You're invited to come out at 6:30 when we tape that. But it airs on Thursday night. So last night, a Longhorn Weekly with Coach Sark from Learfield and heard on the Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. I asked Coach Sark about the Texas Tech defense, and he said it really does get down to starting with that 3-3 stack defense that the Red Raiders run.
They play kind of a 3-3-5 defense, you know, with three down linemen, three backers. The three interior defensive linemen and these two inside backers are downhill, fit-the-run playing guys. Schooler, we know that name, Schooler's brother, he kind of can play in and out of the box. He's a very heady player. And then in the back end, they do a good job with secondary support of getting them involved. So they're playing well together. They're very aggressive in nature up front. They do a good job of kind of in their zone coverages on first and second down. And then when third down rolls around, they try to get off the field.
Yeah. So that's kind of an overview of the Red Raiders defense. I said this on the program last night, and I know you would remember this better than I. I'm not sure. So fact check me.
Okay.
Do you recall, because I seem to recall, a play in the game in Lubbock last year where Colin Schooler tackled Brendan Schooler? Like maybe it was a crossing route over the middle or something, caught it. And I asked Thomas Stepp with UT, was there, and he said that sounds right, like that happened.
That does sound right. You know what? Let me check on that, Craig.
Okay. You've got a few minutes to check on that because
throw that in the Google machine.
Okay.
I'll get back to you.
Maybe it's just because I wanted it to happen.
I don't remember Colin. No. I think you're right. I just don't remember Colin Schooler playing that much for whatever reason.
Right.
In the Texas game last year.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I just don't remember him playing a ton. But
yeah.
That sounds right. If you give me a minute, I'll have an answer.
All right. While Jeff researches that, I did have the opportunity yesterday to visit with the head coach of the Texas Tech Red Raiders, Matt Wells, to talk about this matchup. And we started off with me asking him first and foremost about the trek of his program. Now in his third season, does he feel like they made inroads? They're 3-0. Are they on the right path? And you might imagine his response.
Yeah, Craig, we feel good about the progress, but it's certainly only that. Whether it's a 3-0 start or just being a lot more competitive, I think it's reflective in many ways. I think it's reflective on the field and off the field. Off the field, you know, 73 guys with the 3.0, tremendous community service, very little issues off the field, and guys are becoming more football junkies and learning how to study the game and practice the game the right way. And I think that leads to on-the-field success. I really do. I think it's the accountability and the discipline, which if that's part of your program, does take a little bit of time, especially when you sandwich a COVID year in between year one and year three, like we all had to do. But if the discipline and accountability are very, very important in our program, they are. Having that, the COVID time really was a tough thing and tough for us to overcome a little bit. So we are starting to see some progress here in year three, and I certainly think that you're seeing a lot more competitive football team on the field.
One thing I'm hearing is that two of the biggest challenges that coaches have had to navigate over the past, whatever, 18 months, A, as you mentioned, dealing with COVID and the effects and the protocols. The other deal is how to properly manage the transfer portal and how it can help your program if properly managed. You've been complimented for the guys that you have been able to work through the portal that are a part of your program now. Is there a special art or science to working the portal and determining who's a good fit for your program?
Yeah, I think that's certainly what it is. It's all about fit. I do not think we've missed on one transfer. We've taken, I think, 19 since we've been here, and I don't think we've missed on one heart yet. Every one of them have become either starters or a rotational starter, as I call it, like where they're rotating and they have a role. And so every one of those guys have done that, and I think more than anything, their hearts and who they are, their DNA as people, has added to our culture as we've tried to change that culture around this program. And so I certainly think that that is important. It's tough to do. I credit our coaches for really digging in and finding out who guys are and what makes them tick, and I think we've been able to add to our program in a significant way that way through the portal.
Many have pointed to your quarterback, pointed to Tyler, and say, here's an example of what they're talking about. What's the thing that impresses you most about what you've seen from him, not only since he arrived in the program, but what he's been able to do for you through these first three ball games?
I think the biggest thing with Tyler is his consistency, which I totally respect. He's the same guy now as he was when he got in here in March. He's a come early, stay late kind of guy. He's a football junkie. He's a really good leader. Our guys relate to him. He works his tail off. Just the consistency which he does it. It's not, oh, it's Big 12 week. week. It's Texas week. I'm going to start coming in earlier, staying later after practice. He's been doing it since March. And so I think that, to me, is the number one characteristic out of him that I respect the most.
When someone from the outside would look and see what Sonny Cumbie's been able to do being back in Lubbock and on your coaching staff, folks think of automatically the passing game. But I also look at guys like Taj Brooks from down here in the Austin area and getting Sir Roderick Thompson back as being important. How important is it to have that kind of ground game that you've been able to have in the first few weeks to make that passing game all the more formidable and certainly impressive?
Yeah, I think it's very important. We want to run the ball, truth be told. That sets up RPOs, action shots, run action shots, and your play action game, I think it really does. I think if you're going to win in this league, ultimately you got to be able to stop the run and run the ball.
And you've been able to stop the run really, really well with your defense. What's the biggest difference you've noticed with your guys this season and how effective they've been against the run?
I don't know about a difference, Craig. I think we've just continually gotten gradually better. And we've got older guys. A lot of those guys have chosen to come back and to stay with us, and I think that shows the vibe of the program and how the program is turning, because those would be the first players to either jump to the NFL or jump in the transfer portal. You know, we had DeMarcus Fields, Rico Jeffers, Colin Schooler, just off the top of my head, super seniors that chose to come back, and we return all the D linemen. We're playing about six D linemen right now. Jacob Morgenstern's the other linebacker, and Eric Monroe was the other safety that chose to come back as super seniors. You had Muddy Waters from Duke, as you know, started in 30-some games at Duke. Another guy from Wisconsin, Reggie Pearson, who started 12 out of their 13 games a year ago. Rashad Williams from UCLA. So all these guys have played ball, and so you add three or four veteran older guys in the back end, and then you get the super seniors back. I think you are a little bit more experienced, and you should play a little bit better.
How about what you see on tape from Texas? What really strikes you about the Longhorns?
Well, 5-2. I mean, those two guys are very athletic, very strong, very good running backs. I certainly think Robinson's one of the tops in the Big 12 and the country. Both young quarterbacks are athletic. I don't know if we expect to see both of them or just Casey, but those guys. And then I think you look on defense, and I first go right out to the edge is Jamison and Thompson, you know, number nine. And those guys are very experienced. They've played a lot of football. They can really run. Certainly Jamison is electric and a difference maker in the return game, you know, in special teams. So you have to count for him there.
Matt, what do you think turns a game like this? Do you sense a little more ramp up of emotion and excitement from your guys, not just because of playing Texas, as we've been told in the past, but the fact that it is a conference opener and that these games certainly ramp up the intensity, the importance of that being able to come up with wins?
Yeah, I think in the Big 12, it's a 9-round fight. Every round's important. This is the first one, so certainly there's a little different vibe, I'm sure, around both programs because it's the Big 12 opener.
So there it is, the conversation there with Matt Wells, head coach of Texas Tech. Okay, so Jeff Howe did his research. Turns out, perhaps, the schooler-on-schooler crime was merely a product of my fertile imagination, although I know they were on the field together at the same time several plays, but you're not able to come up with an actual tackle of a schooler-on-a-schooler.
Correct. I cannot find direct schooler-on-schooler crime in last year's game. But, I mean, it was a really good game for both. Brennan had 7 catches for 58 yards and a touchdown. Yep. Was really big toward the end of regulation. And then Colin Schooler had 7 tackles in that game.
Okay. All right. So they were on the field at the same time and around one another.
Yeah.
That might be about as best we can get with it on that. Okay. All right. So, obviously, our coverage begins at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Our game day coverage and the kickoff at 11. Right now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay. Prepare to receive.
Today's edition.
Here we go.
Top 5 matchups of the week.
Attention. Attention, Snoop Daniel. Attention. A private school matchup made the top 5.
Yay.
Hey now.
And it should have. It should have. St. Michael's at Regents.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Brownwood versus Hyde Park.
No. St. Michael's at Regents.
That's a private game.
St. Michael's is 2-1. It's Coach Dykus really trying to make his inroads in his third season now. Regents is Regents is Regents. They're 3-0, and they're a defending state champion. They play tonight at Knight Stadium. So we find out, I think, a little more even about St. Michael's than perhaps Regents tonight.
Yes. Well, we're going to see how real Carson Kruver is.
Absolutely.
Coach Absolutely. Dodge, he remembered him.
I asked Todd the other day because he was in the Westlake program.
This is off the air. This is good.
Well, I just asked him if he remembered. He said, oh, yeah. And then he named, Jeff, about 10 or 11 quarterbacks who were in his program either at Westlake or at South Lake Carroll that went on and were able to start and play at other schools. And he said he was happy for those guys. Yeah. You know, he named one guy, went on, and I forgot who it was, and had a big moment, all that. And I said, when was he? And he goes, he couldn't beat out Greg McElroy. In fact, he was ahead of Greg McElroy until the fall camp workouts. And then McElroy beat him out there at South Lake Carroll in 06.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right, so that's number five, St. Michael's at Regents. Number four, I mentioned this is a big-time road trip, and Jeff said this is a big-time road trip. Yesterday I mentioned in the top five road trip, Lago Vista at LaGrange. Lago's 2-1, LaGrange is 2-2 down at Leopard Stadium. That support Snoop, you are going to be keeping tabs on that
yes,
one.
Yes, I have it written down.
Very good, very good. All right.
Did you, Snoop, give him the small school some love?
And he should on the next one. I mentioned this one as well. Thrall at Rosebud Lot.
Yes.
12-2-AD1, district opener for both. Important there, Thrall 3-1, Rosebud Lot 3-1.
79-77 to the birthplace of LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah.
Granger beat Rosebud Lot last week.
Yeah, they did. Granger's unbeaten. I did not put Granger Bartlett in the top five because
we had that one in top five road trips, though.
We had it on the road trips because of the rivalry in Highway 95. The computer is liking, you know, Granger by 47 in that one. It could be a tough night for the Bulldogs on that one, rivalry notwithstanding. Number two, the game you'll hear on 105.3 The Bat, Bowie Austin High at House Park. Austin High won last year, but we're getting ready to visit with Bowie Bulldogs head coach Jeff Abels. So that's important. And the number one matchup of the week, who would have thought it'd be a matchup of 2-1-2 teams? But it is Cedar Park and Georgetown. Georgetown ISD Athletic Complex there at Birkebach. And both teams hungry for victories. Both teams have played representative non-district schedules, and now they have to get ready for a district opener. And a big one at that.
One of those teams are going to be 1-3 after
that?
Tonight.
We're going to be talking about, wow. I guarantee you, Greg Tepper is probably going to be saying, that's one of the best 1-3 teams in the state. Either he or Rick Renner or I will say it. Somebody will say it if that happens tonight. All right, there it is, your Whataburger Top 5. Up next, we're going to visit with Jeff Abels, head coach of the Bowie Bulldogs. We'll have our Longhorn Notebook. Additionally, we'll have, of course, our Friday edition of Inconceivable, which is always interesting since it's a Florida Friday. And a lot more here on Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Victor gives us this really unique tidbit on the Specs text line at 337-3776. He said, Pflugerville, by losing to Anderson last night, is 0-1 at Nelson Field. Yes, last night was the first time Pflugerville has ever played at I.I. Nelson Field. He said, who would have thought? What are they, like 5 miles
north
possible?
Of that? How is that possible?
I know. How about that? Bowie's played at Nelson Field, but they've played more games, obviously, at their home stadium of Berger and at House Park, where they'll be tonight to take on the Maroons of Austin High. And joining us on the Vaqueros Cafe Hotline, it's time for our weekly conversation brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Check them out on the web at cpdoors.com. Jeff Abels, head coach of the Bowie Bulldogs, his team able to navigate a bye week and now ready to get back to work. Jeff, I appreciate the time. How are you this morning?
I'm good, guys. Good morning to you guys.
Good morning. And you have had a team play over at Nelson before, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Over 34 years. Yeah, we've played there a few times.
That's what I thought. I thought so as well. First of all, take us through. Last week I asked you about going into the bye week and the things that you concentrate on and work on as well. How did you feel your guys did coming out of the open date week and now getting back to work this week to get ready for the Maroons?
I thought they did a good job. We had some time to get a lot of fundamental work done and then get some rest and then come back this week and get to work on Austin High, who's a good football team and well-coached. And the kids have done a good job this week in their preparation.
Coach, the game you played last year with Austin High, high-scoring, tight ball game, came down to the end. And I know that's a team kind of moving on from Charles Wright, having to replace a really good player at quarterback. Do you take anything from last year's game, you know, over your experience, or do you just completely turn the page and look at it, hey, new season, don't even think about what happened last year?
Well, I think what you do is you always say, you know, anything can happen in a ball game, and remind the kids that, you know, year in, year out. I mean, we've been playing Austin High for a long time, mm-hmm. and they're always good games, and you never know what can happen in those games. And so you always remind your kids, hey, you know, you got to play every down, and, you know, you can't take anything for granted, and you got to get after it. And they're going to play hard. Their kids do a good job playing hard, and so we're going to have to match that intensity tonight.
Coach Abels is Snoop. You know, I've been watching Bowie for a while now, and I want to say this is the best team since 2016. Do you see any similarities between those two teams?
I'm trying to remember back to 2016. I remember the kids, you know, that's what you remember, Snoop, as you age, I guess. I can't even remember what our record was.
No, Coach, y'all killed it. I think the last game of the season, it was in McLean Stadium, and y'all lost to the Woodlands, who was such an amazing – well, Isaiah Santiago, Elijah Higgins, Dalen Threadgill, anyway.
Now you're talking what I can understand.
Oh.
I remember the kids, and I remember the relationship.
Wade Smith.
Yep, the great kids, great group of young men, and yes, I kind of can relate these guys this year to that set of young men, because they're good kids, they're fun to coach, they're fun to be around, and you know what? We're all trying to do the same thing at the end of the day. We're all trying to mold young men's lives and make them better men for the future. And we have the great game of football that helps us teach us about life. And, you know, there's ups and downs, there's highs, there's lows. But at the end of the day, it's all about those relationships that you have with those kids. And you know what? Other coaches as well, you know, Coach Rosenthal is a great guy, and his staff. We know a bunch of those guys. Nick Lebo played for us over here at Bowie a long time ago. But you know what? We're all trying to do the same thing, and that is, like I said, you know, make a difference in young people's lives.
Visiting with Jeff Abels, Bowie Bulldogs head coach. They take on Austin High tonight at 7:30 at House Park in a game you can hear right on 105.3 The Bat. Jeff, how about your impressions of the Maroons? What is it that really leaps off the page at you when you look at Austin High?
Well, it's like I told somebody the other day, you know, probably the greatest compliment I think you could say, at least that I would think, is that their kids play hard, you know. And if somebody said that about my team, that's a great compliment, because, you know, you can do all kinds of different things and schemes, and kids graduate and come and go, but year in, year out, if your kids play hard, then you have a chance, and that's saying something about your program. And that's what I say about Coach Rosenthal's group is they play hard, and it's not – it doesn't matter what quarter it is, first, second, third, fourth quarter, they're going to play hard, and that's what you want all your kids to do. And so that's what we're trying to do with our guys as well, is, you know, no matter what the situation, you know, be a relentless competitor every down, and the score will take care of itself.
Before we let you go, Jeff, there's one other thing I want to ask you about, because and it kind of rolls back to what we opened the segment with when we were talking about, hey, yeah, you've taken teams over to Nelson Field before. And I know coaches have to. They have to, by nature, be in their insular world of getting their teams prepared to play a football game, no matter the surroundings, no matter the environment, no matter the venue. All of that said, House Park's a pretty historic place. Do you like taking teams in there, even though if you're obviously in those cases, and in most all of those cases, you're going to be the visiting team, but do you like taking a team in to play in that old historic venue?
Absolutely. It's a beautiful place to play. You know, you have the Austin skyline right there, and you know there's not a track around the field like what we have at Burger, so everything's a little bit closer to you. In a way, it's kind of like the old Cotton Bowl. I hadn't been to the Cotton Bowl a long time, but, you know, you had that same feeling there where there was no track around you and everything was right on top of you. And it's a great place to play. And I think our kids, I don't think we played there last year, but I think our kids enjoy playing there because they know it's a great atmosphere. And a good, like you said, a historic place to play. And it's a great venue for high school football.
No doubt about it. By the way, and fans won't be able to grasp this, but those of us who have to work out of press boxes understand it. I imagine it's a little bit challenging for your coaches on the headsets when they're up there in the press box because the quarters are a little bit snug on both sides of the field.
A little bit snug there, yes. And we're kind of used to that there. We know that when we go there, so it'll be all right, and we'll work it all out. But it should be a beautiful night, a great night for high school football tonight.
Looking forward to it. Hey, Jeff, as always, best of luck tonight, and we'll look forward to the visit again next week.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you. You guys have a great day.
You too.
Thanks,
all right,
Coach.
That's Jeff Abels, head coach of the Bowie Bulldogs. Bowie plays Austin High, yes, at Historic House Park. Love the venue. It can be a little challenging these days. For the coaches, there's the booth where they have to sit in, the assistant coaches on both sides. You know, on one side, the Lamar Boulevard side is where one set of coaches goes, and then the other side will be for the other set of coaches. And it's also a little bit challenging for the radio broadcasters. Dee Hanson and I were communicating about that this week. And when Roger Wallace and the crew go over there from KBVO, it's a little bit challenging over there because it's an older venue and you're trying to retrofit television and radio and those kind of modern things into that kind of venue, but it's a great place. It really is.
I remember somebody from either town, and I'm inviting people from Gerald to text the show, which could be dicey. I remember there was a 1999, I just can't remember the round, I think it was a state quarterfinal. Gerald and Bartlett played at House Park.
Oh.
And I remember when that matchup came out, I was envious. I'm like, oh man, I would love to play a game
at
House Park. I got to play one at Wildcat Stadium in Temple, which actually that's on a lot of people's, like, if you're talking about Texas high school football
stadiums. I've never done a game there. I've love to do a game there sometime. Yeah, I've never done a game.
If you're talking about Texas high school football stadiums, that's on some people's bucket list. Yeah. I guess because you drive by it on 35 and you see it. It just looks massive.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing that and being like, oh, that would be so cool to play a game at House Park. And I've covered numerous games at House Park. I love that place.
I always said when we were able to do it, and we can't anymore because of safety reasons, but when we were able to do it, when you broadcast on the roof at House Park, it was the best vantage point position to call any football game in any venue I have ever been. And that includes AT&T Stadium, which is incredible. The network television booth to call a state championship is just awesome.
Rose Bowl?
Rose Bowl, they stuck us down at the end zone. We were down at the corner. But it was I know it's
better than FedEx Field.
Yeah, absolutely, which was probably the worst. But because you were right there on the roof and you feel like you're just hanging out over the action. You see everything so vividly. And then, of course, there's the skyline and everything else. It's just wonderful. It was great. Now, they don't allow that on the roof anymore due to safety reasons. And just letting you know that. They don't allow that. But it was great back in the day, no doubt.
I think the first game I covered at House Park, it was a Westlake Austin High game. And I remember sitting in a chair that I'm thinking, man, if I sneeze or breathe wrong, this chair is probably going to be a goner. And if I hit the floor, judging by the way this press box looks, I might take a nice tumble.
In my 3 years out of the 24 years now, I guess it is, or however many years, I forgot, lost count, 20, it's 25 years. There were three years I did not do High School Scoreboard Live, 2001, 2002, 2003, and that was 2001. It was getting ready to take over the play-by-play for Texas. Then in 2002 and 2003, the first 2 years, and then I transitioned back into being able to do it again. But that 2001 season was the 1 year Keith Moreland and I did the Westlake broadcast over at the other place. And I'll never forget the Austin High game, and Austin High went in unbeaten, and Westlake was unbeaten, and there were people sitting on the infield bridge, sitting on 15th. Right there.
That was one of those years where that was going to be it. Austin High was going to get Westlake.
And it was 56-6 the final. It was that deal there. Anyway, all right, it's time now for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
What was that murmur? There's a growling. It's time for the notebook.
No, when I hit that dead air, I'm choking.
Oh, okay.
It's like Snoop's stomach or something.
I wondered what that was.
Go down to the vending machine, get some cookies or something.
It's a problem. It's like, I guess it's compulsive disorder. Sorry. I just want to be on one time.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead. And Snoop, can you give me some flex music? We're going to do three matchups to watch for Texas and Texas Tech. That's what we do on Friday with the notebooks. Matchup number one, Craig, Keandre Coburn versus Dawson Deaton, the Texas Tech center, one of the best in the country. Did not give up a sack last season. He's on the Remington Trophy watch list as the best center in the country. If you're talking about this game, where it's going to start for Texas, the interior defensive line for Texas has to be more impactful than they've been in the first three games. And I do wonder how much of that, Craig, has been by design, knowing that you've got a linebacker group that works much better when they can get out in space, they don't have to work through the trash, they can just hunt the ball and go find it. And how much of that is just the fact that this interior defensive line just hasn't made enough plays? It's getting to the point where the Keandre Coburns of the world, Tavondre Sweat, Moro Ojimo, those guys have got to start making more plays. And but that is the matchup for me. It's got to start with Keandre Coburn and his head-to-head matchup with Dawson Deaton. Matchup number two, how about Pete Kwiatkowski against Tyler Shough? Now you're saying, well, they're probably familiar with each other, right? Tyler Shough's time at Oregon? No. In the 3 years Tyler Shough was at Oregon, he never took a single snap against the Washington Huskies. He was supposed to last season, but that game got canceled because of COVID reasons, which is how, as Craig reminded me during the break, not only is that how Oregon ended up in the Pac-12 championship game, that's also kind of started down the road of how Colorado ended up in the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah.
Which, that game was over kind of before it started. So
Hey, 4-point game at halftime. 4-point game at halftime.
It was a 4-point game at
halftime.
With
a quarterback change.
True. Thank you, Craig, for being ever so optimistic. There's a lot of stuff about the Tom Herman era I'd rather forget.
Okay.
But, hey, it was a bowl win. It was a bowl win for Tom Bowl Herman, as Bucky and Rod dubbed him. And matchup number three for your three matchups to watch for Texas and Texas Tech tomorrow, the Texas running backs against the Texas Tech defensive front. Tech's got one of the best run defenses in the country, giving up less than 2 yards per carry, 1.83 yards per carry, to be specific. They've been really good against the run. I'm not expecting, Craig, this Texas offensive line to just suddenly flip a switch and be the 05 offensive line, just be this dominant group that rolls people off the ball. I've heard, always heard coaches say this, and I believe this because I think this running back group has proven capable of this. At some point, running backs, you got to earn your scholarship. You got to go be an athlete. You have got to account for unblocked defenders. That could be lowering a shoulder and getting what you can. That could be making a guy miss in the hole. That could be outrunning a guy, beating him to the spot. But the Texas running backs, their ability to maximize runs against a Texas Tech defensive front that's been really good against the run, see if you can pop them early and make them feel like that good run defense they've got is a mirage. Remind them that they are the Texas Tech defense that has historically, in the last probably, I don't know, two decades, not been very good defending the run. The Texas running backs, this game is going to be on them. Yes, a lot of it's on Bijan Robinson. We finally saw last week against Rice what I've been talking about all offseason. The strength of this offense, Steve Sarkisian can build this offense around that running back group with what Roschon Johnson brings to the table, as versatile as Keelan Robinson is. And then, Craig, a guy we talked about, you always look for who those guys get a lot of buzz in the preseason, in the scrimmages. You and I both heard a lot about Jonathan Brooks. Hey, Jonathan Brooks looks good. Jonathan Brooks looks good. Well, Jonathan Brooks looked really good last week. I don't know how much he'll play in this game, but Texas, Stark has said it throughout the preseason and leading up to the start of the season. He felt like they were legitimately four deep at running back. They looked four deep against Rice. How deep, how good, how talented did they look against Texas Tech?
He said that on Longhorn Weekly. Said that we're four. He said, yeah. Count Jonathan, we're four. Four deep at that. So, all right. So there it is.
Go three matchups to watch for tomorrow's game.
A couple of things here. First of all, Blue Cougar's daddy wants, it says, good luck to Jeff's alma mater, Florence Buffaloes. Hopefully the Tea Sippers and Gerald.
See, I don't think this guy is pro Florence. I think this is just an anti-Gerald texter.
But you welcome those too.
I'm beaming with pride. It warms my heart to know that I'm not alone in my fight.
They're not playing this week, but they'll be playing the Buffalo Bisons next week. Somebody remind us about Travis and Waco U at House Park. Hey, I did a bi-district playoff game at House Park between Dripping Springs and a Travis Rebels team coached by Drew Sanders. Right before he left for the Vandegrift, to start the Vandegrift program.
Was that when, like, 70 to 0?
No, it was like 14 to 7.
Really?
It was chilly, windy night. Well, that was not the best night to be on the roof, by the way. Early November, and the wind was whipping down Lamar Boulevard on that one. And, Victor, who, of course, spends his Thursday nights and Friday nights over at Nelson Field, and who told us that Pflugerville is 0-1 at I.I. Nelson, we've got someone who begs to differ. Victor, if you're listening, they said Pflugerville lost to Reagan, then Reagan, now Northeast Early College, lost to Reagan at Nelson Field way back in 1993.
That couldn't be right. Pflugerville had to have played a game at Nelson at some point.
93, says someone. Because that sounds like somebody who played in that game or had a vested interest in that game or was at that game and that sort of thing.
And so, real quick, since I know we got to hit a break, but since we're talking about state high school football stadiums that we love so much.
Yeah.
One that I know you cover games on the Metroplex. It's fallen down in the pecking order as new stadiums have popped up. I love the Boneyard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At Lake Highlands.
Yeah.
I love the Boneyard.
Yeah. Yeah. I
good sight lines. Again, there's no track. Everything's right on top of you.
I always think of Nate Newton because we're doing the Lake Highlands Richardson game there, and he's climbing up that iron rung ladder up the side. And this is when the Cowboys were defending Super Bowl champions. And I thought, if that ladder gives way, and Jimmy Johnson's all-pro guard and Pro Bowl guard falls and breaks a leg or something like that, I'm a dead man.
Well, you thought the Munchos incident was bad.
Oh, it would have not have helped. And by then, I was doing Jimmy's radio show, but I thought, he'll kill me. But he didn't. We all got up on the roof and did the
game. You know how much
Heineken,
you'd had to buy stock in Heineken to make that thing right.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. And then, even then, I don't know. Somebody asked me, he said, I know you love Starbucks. Curious, what's your go-to Starbucks order? I wouldn't say I love it. It's more out of an element of convenience. I can get to a lot of them. And it's funny that you asked. My go-to is normally, I just get the Pike Place. It's a coffee. There's what I get. Snoop likes a Breve, half and half, half cream and half coffee. But I did try this morning this apple crisp macchiato. It's pretty good.
Crisp.
It's kind of like drinking an apple pie a little bit, if you like that. All right. It might sound a little inconceivable, but the real inconceivable is coming up next with Light the Tower when we continue on the horn.
The fall. And you're still putting off fixing your clogs, leaks, and pipes, or trying to do it yourself?
Because that's
inconceivable.
You keep using the horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Well, inconceivable, as we know, quite often means several things on Friday. It means one thing in specific, obviously, and that's the Florida element of it.
Save our low-hanging fruit for the end of the week.
Yeah, there is that. Somebody just asked me about Starbucks, and they say that apple crisp thing is really good iced, I imagine, probably is. You should know this, by the way, Snoop, since you're a Starbucks file. If you're ordering a drink from Starbucks, now you're not vegan. We know that.
No.
But this is good news for vegan Starbucks people.
This clearly does not apply to me.
Nope. This one won't apply to you in any way, shape, or form. They have a brand new whipped cream topping at Starbucks for you vegans out there. It's lentil-based.
Ugh.
You ever had lentils? Now, I don't mind lentil soup, but... I don't think I'd want that in my whipped cream, but
I had a rheumatologist tell me to stay away from lentils because of the gout.
Wow. Yeah. Did not know that. Okay.
Different triggers for different folks, I guess, Greg.
Yeah. Here's something that I just did this the other night, and heads up, folks. Costco is limiting how much toilet paper you can buy again.
Got a TP shortage?
Yeah, it looks that way. Len and I went to Costco the other night and bought some. The other night, I bought one of those big packages, and now they're going to limit the purchase on that. And we only bought one package, but it had a lot in it. You know, the way it was packaged.
Sam's Club has been limiting people to one last time I was there, and it's been a couple of weeks. So
yeah, it says
don't hoard the TP, and we'll be fine.
Yeah, it says the factors pressuring supply chains and inflation include port delays, container shortages, COVID disruptions, shortages on various components, raw materials and ingredients, labor cost pressures. Anytime we're talking about toilet issues, when you use the word pressure, it's not good. Anyway, and truck and driver shortages, according to the CEO of
Costco.
Blame
it on that damn Suez Canal incident.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it started with that, right? It did do that.
I could blame COVID, you know, a pandemic. I could blame that, but I'll just blame that damn Suez Canal boat.
Please do. By the way, what would an inconceivable file be without a snake story from Australia? These snakes here, these fellows were crawling in a woman's house. There's four of them.
Ugh.
Four big old snakes just crawling in a woman's house there in Queensland in Australia. And she was
terrible.
Like, what in the world is going on with that? But, you know how the Aussies are. But if that ain't coming, get on your way, mate. Go on. Chew on now. You know, so it didn't bother her.
Once again, we go to our inconceivable Australia bureau chief, Craig Way, for this update.
Now we get to the bureau chief of everything Florida, and that would be, of course, Jeff Howe. We have three items for you. One, we just the Washington Post wants you to know that Florida man may be getting soon outdone by Maryland man. Now, they have to go a ways, I think, to get there. But they're saying housing crisis being debated in the gubernatorial primaries. No. Is it Baltimore's new plastic bag ban? No. They're in Montgomery County for that. No. They have gators in swimming pools. They said, we don't have the meth lab that accidentally butt-dialed 911 like they had in Florida. They had that. But they have a lot of other issues as well, including a judge who died by suicide as police arrived to arrest him. He was accused of videotaping boys that he brought with him on hunting and fishing trips. Investigators had to CT scan his body after he crunched and swallowed data cards because he didn't want to get caught with the evidence. So he's like eating the data cards. But they found other videos, enough for arrest, so they were going to get him, but he shot himself before they entered his home. Huh.
That, Craig, that's definitely goes in the file of people who need to be boiled in oil and have their fat sold for soap.
Yeah, he just beat you to the punch in this case. Okay, it's on the Florida, and there's two things. First of all, and this happened the other day, this is just bad luck. I mean, this could happen in a lot of places, but it definitely is going to happen where a man was hit by a car, and then he got up. He suffered serious injuries, got hit by a car, and then got up, was trying to get across a crosswalk, and then he got run over by a bus.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah, and that finished the job. So he was at an intersection that had a traffic control signal. Yeah, he was in Orlando. He crossed against the lights, and.